Welcome to Paw Print Academy, your blueprint to raising better dogs. My name is Ryan, and I am your host, alongside my co-host, Brianna.
Hi.
And together, we're bringing you real-world training insights built on leadership, structure, and proven methods. But this show is a lot more than just teaching your dog to sit or stay. It's about building trust, creating calmness, and becoming the kind of leader that your dog truly needs. We do that with our three-pillar method of trust, obey, and perform. Thanks for being here on this journey with us. Let's get started. Hey there, welcome to episode 4, Affection versus Leadership. How too much love creates chaos. Good evening, everybody. This is Ryan. I am joined today. We've got a full house in here. We've got Brianna on the mic.
Hello. Hello.
Now we have Brianna on the mic.
Here I am.
And we've got Melody.
Hi.
And we've also got Nick.
How's it going?
So tonight, Nick is our guest and our guest co-host tonight. He brings years and years of military working dog experience from a couple of different, individual. Nick, you got to jump on the mic before I butcher this.
Yeah, so, no worries. No
a lot
worries.
Of like individual areas within the military, right? Yeah. But I would love for you to kind of explain your background before I end up going down three different rabbit holes at once get stuck in all of them.
No worries. Absolutely. So long story short, my background started back in 2017 as a working dog handler. I'm in the Marine Corps I've been... like I said, a military working dog handler since 2017. And then I have been, I'm a former special operations multi-purpose canine handler as well. Throughout my tenure, I've been working with, specialized search dogs, which are, single purpose dogs that they only work for explosive detection. I've also worked with patrol dogs, drug dogs, and then tracking dogs as well. Tracking actually is one of my favorite things that I've had to do because it's a pretty cool skill set. Pretty cool to see the dogs, actually like get into that genetics and like their just natural like desire to go and find something.
So, yeah,
awesome. Yeah. So I'm gonna try to kind of drive this forward, but really encompass. I want you to jump in because there's a lot of these things. So we obviously focus on pet dogs, and a lot of the leadership and things that we try to cover in the in Paw Print Academy is really geared towards those pet dogs. But I think what's really cool about having you on is going to be how interrelated leadership is and these intangible skills that we try to teach dogs. It's not just sit down, stay calm, but those things that build the temperament of the dog, the confidence of the dog, and build the relationship where you have a dog that wants to listen to you. And I feel like we're more important to have a dog that wants to listen to you than when like it's like mission critical and like people, lives are on the line.
Absolutely.
It's a lot different than like my dog will not come in from going to the bathroom and I cannot get them to come back in through the store.
Right, because do those dogs even like sit and down?
I mean,
Is there a reason?
I don't know. I think they're definitely all interconnected. And I mean, as we dive into this, I think there's going to be a lot of correlations between both the pet side and the working dog side.
Mm-hmm.
So looking forward to that.
So I am for sure going to have a couple of questions along the way. And so I'll try to kind of address those to you or to the trainers as we go. I have a kind of a good outline for the episode, but as you see these interrelated things that like pop up, I would love for you to just jump in and own that space.
Sounds good.
Because you definitely have like the experience to do that. Also, so Melody's back. Hey. So this is Melody's first appearance on the official podcast for Paw Print Academy, but she is a regular around here. She's just been crazy busy with a whole bunch of different pet sitting and dog right. training and different places yeah. and things like that. So
that's a market.
Right. I mean, you could run an entire
September
business.
September is
that,
the
I'm
month.
Sure.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, apparently.
Wow.
Because I think kids go back to school and then everyone's like, let's get in our last vacations now.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what it is, but September, yeah.
Nice.
That makes
so
sense.
Melody works for the company, but she does her, she kind of does her own like in-home and in-house pet sitting for dogs that either their owners like don't want them, or maybe the dog's reactive, maybe the dog has special needs, maybe the dog has special medication or whatever, or they go, their owners don't want them to, you know, go to a traditional like kennel space or something like that, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So she's like never
no,
here.
No, yeah. So that's been, yeah. I'm never here, but I'll be here more in October.
Yeah.
So I'll be
cool. So we'll
you
get you on some more of those yeah. episodes. But all right. So that kind of catches us up to where we are. So the core idea for tonight, talking about affection versus leadership, and it's a concept that we have touched on before, but definitely not to the degree we're going to talk about it tonight. So our core idea for this evening is that love alone does not raise a balanced dog. And you can, this is going to, right, you fight me on this, but you can overlove your dog and not build the relationship that you think you're building. Right. So at no point am I sitting here and telling you that, well, you can overlove your dog and then just the love is going to make your dog explode or something bad is going to happen because of it. No, it's more of the lost opportunity that you could be using that love and affection to build your relationship in a way that like makes sense to your dog and builds clarity. And a lot of times when we use affection, how humans interact and how humans like to receive affection, dogs don't always respond to that in the same way, right? And so dogs aren't always going to get the same message out of that. Mm-hmm. And so without leadership, affection often ends up fueling this like byproduct, which turns into anxiety, let alone like entitlement. And then that kind of segues into just like chaos in the home. And that comes from this lack of this foundation. So tonight we're going to talk about how we can still love our dogs and we can still throw affection at them and we can still flood them with affection. But if we just do a couple of things first, and build off of that, then the affection amplifies our relationship with those dogs rather than detracts from it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So major point number one on my outline, I am going to try to keep myself reined in because I want to go down all these different rabbit holes. But affection without boundaries creates confusion. Now, with boundaries we've talked about before, and boundaries will always be those left and right limits that keep the dog knowing that and being confident that they can perform the way that is appropriate and in a way that you want them to, right? Without boundaries, the dog is just, you know, just whiffing the baseball bat and whiffing at the ball. And maybe they hit a home run sometimes, maybe they get a single, and maybe they just strike out. And we want to try to build something that the dog can be confident in right from the get-go. And so with that, right, dogs need clarity more than they need constant praise or petting. I would assume, so before we really go down the trainer route with this, right, Nick, I want to ask you. So first of all, on the working dog side, like, do you guys even use affection? Is there affection that comes into play?
Absolutely. In this?
Because I'm pretty sure that most people have in their heads that, like, oh, a military working dog? No, you don't. Like, no, those are not, yeah, no. those are like, it's X over the cuddle.
No, right. Yeah, it's absolutely true on that, thought process. However, it is very, it is quite contrary. In specific, my dog, when I first got him, he had such a severe outing issue that, and he didn't really care for food. We even tried, withholding food for a little bit of time before we did, and we tried to use that as rewarding. Or as a reward for him. And, he didn't really care for that. It wasn't really, getting that target behavior it wasn't reinforcing the target behavior at the time. So, what I found, was that for the first few months that I had my dog, he actually was solely on a physical praise. Mm. And that kind of goes into your primary and secondary reinforcements, primary, being food, water, shelter, sex. And then your secondary reinforcements, that's where like the toys, food and praise comes in, or like in physical praise comes into play. Yeah. And, on the working dog side of things, like it's a constant flow of, hey, like, where's the hierarchy of rewards here, and which reward honestly just fits the behavior and then yeah. fits the target like as much as possible. Because, when we're doing a shoot house, I want my dog to be calm and level headed. So if I'm trying to give my dog a Kong, I give my dog a Kong and the next thing, he drops it and now it's flying all over the place. He's on a hip lead and I'm getting dragged all over the place.
Yeah.
Food. Yeah. I can keep food on me, but we're hot,
I'm
sweaty,
just imagining gross. Like right. breaking down a door and shooting in a house and then like throwing a Kong for
right,
your
those
dog.
Those things bounce everywhere. They're so annoying.
Yeah, no, they are. It's definitely something for sure. But yeah, so a lot of times me specifically, everyone has, as everyone knows, there's a thousand different ways to do this. Mm-hmm. Me in specific though, I do enjoy, using physical praise for a more level headed, reinforcement, because it does, yeah. And it calm breeds calm.
And so,
because right, food's a stimulant.
Right. Okay. That's
I
where
say
I was going
it all
with
the
that.
Time.
It's like, say it louder for
yeah,
those in the back.
Say it louder. Food is a stimulant.
Right. And so we on the less serious side, when we're teaching a dog to walk next to you, we oftentimes try to do that completely foodless, right?
Yeah.
Just using reinforcing words and using real low energy amounts of praise in order to keep the dog kind of focused on what's going on versus like amping mm-hmm. them up. So, but right. Just picturing that whole thing in my head, I'm like, right. You are, I'm sure, amping this dog up to the max already.
Oh, the dog's through the roof. Yes. Last thing you need is a Kong coming out and just all.
Right. So wow. I immediately went back to golden retrievers that we had in pairs, and the boy, like, he was so overstimulated all the time. Like, we couldn't even use food in half his situations because he was just, it was chaos.
Right. And we couldn't use affection either. Right.
Right?
You couldn't use anything because he was just living life and loved everything.
Full golden.
And so, right.
All the time. And then his sister, on the other hand, it's like,
wanted nothing to do with anything.
You try to give her food, right. You try to give her something, but you know what? Ball every time.
Ball
you pull
life.
Out a ball. Ball was her entire life.
Yeah. No. So dogs need clarity. And how would you say rein this in your environment, in kind of the environment that you just talked about, like, how do you even keep clarity in a situation like that? And we're going to go a little bit off of the affection versus leadership, but I feel like in that moment, you're looking for mostly leadership and a lot of clarity.
Yeah. So, I mean, honestly, everything is, each and every one of us know here, it comes down to the foundational skill sets and the amount of time you put into the training itself, because, before you're able to introduce all these different, distractions and different variables, having that solid foundation. And as you were talking about earlier, just having that differentiation of like, hey, praise versus play versus just simply just having a left and right lateral limits on where to go and how to comprehend things, because like dogs don't speak English, they don't speak Spanish, they don't speak any other language. They go off of physical and kind of verbal cues that, you know, that we give to them. So just having solid foundations, really, like going straight down to that.
Yeah. And so when we talk about foundation in, you know, family dog training, we're always talking about like leading from the front and showing the dog clear communication, like standing still while you use a verbal cue and then moving to reinforce it versus moving and talking and rewarding and touching the dog all at the same time.
Yeah.
So yeah, that 100% that is how we build clarity kind of the same way, but probably to a significantly lesser degree.
It's all through. I was actually just having this conversation earlier with someone else about pets. Is dogs are all dogs. To each their own. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's kind of the same as people. You know, everyone has different ceilings, so to say. Don't get me wrong. Everyone and every dog is capable of, you know, achieving amazing things. But each and every dog, you know, there's so many dogs that try to get into the military every year. And most dogs don't have the genetics to, you know, make it. And
that makes sense.
It's to no fault of their own. I bet there's a few pets out there that could probably do it as well. But it really comes down to genetics on that aspect too.
Right. Because they test them so early that like the immediate signs, if they have it, they're like, nope, we can't have it.
There's tests out there that, you know, you could literally look at the dog, give it 10 seconds, and you could tell if that dog has it or not.
Yeah.
You know, to a small extent, not to like the fullest, but
yeah.
All right. So, how about timing, right? We'll go kind of back to the affection side, but, as I'm kind of like picturing all this, the timing of your reward and, as you were working with your dog, right? The timing of that affection is like supremely important, yeah, right?
Timing is everything.
So, right. And so you're using it as a reinforcer for whatever it is that you're trying to do. In my point, I think that we often use affection because we're using it like for a normal dog owner sitting at home with their dog. We use affection in the same way that like a human would affection, right? And so petting and cuddling and all of those things, mm-hmm. that's like the affection that we're talking about. And when we give that, sometimes we get off on the timing. And so we inadvertently reinforce the wrong message to the dog. And so that's what we're like kind of going to go talk about here. Because I think that rewarding, even using affection, and you used it very successfully with your dog is what you were talking about. Yes. But if you would have used it at the wrong time, it wouldn't have been useful.
Oh, absolutely not.
So on the pet dog side, we often do it when like for a reactive dog, when the dog gets scared.
Yeah.
Dog gets scared of something and we scoop them up and like, oh, there. It's okay. It's okay. It's okay. And we have just created a reinforcing event to what it was that they were just scared of or worried about or upset about.
Right. Gabe's like the prime example at a dog group like 2 weeks ago. He got scared because all the dogs started barking at the ice cream truck. And he doesn't bark, so he was just terrified that everybody else was barking. And then for the rest of the class, he was so weird and thrown off, and he was like shaking and couldn't get out of his own head because the dog's barking. He hates other dogs barking. And he kept trying to cuddle up next to me and like touch my legs. And it's because he didn't really want to look at me or pay attention to me, but he wanted to know that I was like there. And I kept nudging him away. And not that he was so far away from me, but I was like, you're not going to lean on me. And I remember somebody, I think it might have been Lila, was like, why do you keep doing that? And I was like, because he's trying to find security in me and I want him to feel confident. There's nothing going on. We're in a dog club. He's been here every time an ice cream truck came by, threw all the dogs off. They barked. It's nothing to be scared of. And if in that moment, like I would coddle him and be like, it's okay, or start petting him, showing him affection, I'm teaching him that
it's a change in body language,
right? Whatever he's trembling from, it's okay to do that when it's completely not.
Yeah, exactly. I think I wasn't at this group session, But I definitely think, you know, in situations like that, because, you know, dealing with explosive breaching, a lot of times we could have some dogs that do get a little fearful from that.
Right.
So
it's
weird.
Yeah. It's one of the things that we do try to, you know,
it sounds
already,
loud.
We try to separate
those dogs.
It's
a bomb going
dogs.
Off. Yeah. No big deal.
But one of the things that we do, though, is we do try to offer replacement behaviors in place of that, you know, if they're shying away from it. You know, trying to just introduce something fun into the environment that's going to make that dog less reactive over that, you know, that negative stimulus, you know, just counter conditioning, whatever that, you know, negative thing is, whatever, you know, in this case, it's the dog's barking
right.
or the ice cream truck. I don't know why you'd be scared of an ice cream truck.
Right.
I love ice cream.
He doesn't know what the song means.
Yeah, I know.
He's never gotten anything from there.
Dog needs a pup cup.
Yeah, he does.
It was louder than the music in his head.
Funny enough, so. I've offered him pup cups. Yeah. It's like the one thing he won't eat. He's like, I'm not touching it. It's weird.
But yeah, no, it's one of those things. Like, we do that. We have to do that a lot in our line of work, so.
Yeah, so another thing was last weekend we went to, like, a food truck rodeo at a big park, and he hates, like, food trucks because they have the big generators on the back, and there were, like, a ton of people there.
A lot
and
of noises.
There's music, and, yeah, just lots going on, and never 3 years ago would I have ever taken him to, like, an event, but I had three dogs to choose from, and I was like, I'm going to bring Gabe. And brought him, and he found French fries on the ground, and French fries are his lifelong love. He loves French fries. And so what did I do? I just started sprinkling food all over the ground, like, while we were waiting in line. And by the time we were, like, out of line, he was like, yeah, this is okay. This isn't so bad. And I'm like, yeah, that's what he needed, was to just, like, dive into food and, like, search for it on the ground because he loves to sniff. And that was so good for him in that moment. I think he got the most out of it out of all three dogs I could have, like, picked.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So that was, like, a replacement behavior then. So that was, like, a replacement behavior. Distraction.
Right. It's like, sniff the ground. Don't pay attention to what's going on
so
around
then
you.
So it becomes a positive connotation.
Right.
Whether it's a distraction that they like or replacement behavior.
So one of the things I look at when I do, like, behavioral dogs is, like, box feeding. And you dump a bunch of stuff in a box that they really want to eat. And it cuts off all the visuals of the outside world. And so you have a dog that's not so stressed by all the visuals that it can see. It's just, they call it a dopamine box because they just get bursts of dopamine in this box. It's like they're eating. They can't see anything that's going on around them. So they tend to be less nervous. And then you can build stimulus into that and start adding things that are a little scary, but they're still getting those dopamine from the food that they're eating and the treats they're getting in that box.
Right. And then in all these scenarios, they're getting that, like, desensitization basically gradually. So then it's to the point where you don't even need to feel like, oh, should I coddle my dog?
Right. And so, yeah, it's like I could have, right. I could have in that moment in the food truck, like, rodeo thing been like, I'm just going to, like, pet him and, like, tell him it's okay and be like, you're such a good boy. You're a great job. But I did little to no talking to him. I didn't need to say anything other than stay right here next to me. And at one point a kid came up and was like, can I pet him? And I was like, no, he's really nervous right now. And they still, like, tried to pet him. And the parents were like, don't, he might bite you. And I was like, that's the last thing he would do, but maybe, so back up.
Right. But yeah, he'll bite you.
You got
to run away. Watch out.
Right. He literally never touch anything with his mouth. But it's like in those moments, you don't have to give your dog a command. You're just working through some of those things. And even if your dog is not fearful in those moments, if your dog is reactive and you do the same thing and you coddle them and tell them it's okay and tell them they're a good boy and all of these words that we like to use, you're counteracting all of that.
Right.
And
then
they're seeking in a negative way.
Because you're giving them that affection. Mm-hmm. And then honestly, you're just making it worse.
You're reinforcing how they feel.
Yeah,
you're telling them that,
like,
it's,
well,
okay,
this was nice
to feel that
they
way.
They gave me this attention when I was like this, so I'm just going to, it's like almost over the top, like a kid scraping his knee type of thing that we talked about before on here.
Yeah.
But if it's just a minor, you know, just kind of keep going, brush it off. But if you're like, oh, baby, then then they over exaggerate, like fake crying when it doesn't even really hurt, because they're like, I like what the attention I'm getting.
Right, because if it's like, if your kid screams in a grocery store, who's buying them the lollipop that they asked for? Raise your hand. Zero. Right? Nobody. Because if you do, you're reinforcing the fact that that kid cried hard enough in a store to gain what they wanted, which, if it's affection, then it's affection. If it's a lollipop to a kid, it's a lollipop. But whatever they did right before that behavior is what got them that reward.
Right. And that, I love that you brought it all full circle right back to the affection.
It took a long time.
It took a little bit, but we got there. We went from reactivity back to, but that's really, really important is it, like, what happened right before you offered that affection? In this case, we're talking about affection, but it works with reactivity. This conversation works with everything because dogs are very, very binary in their thinking, right? It's black and white, yes or no, ones and zeros. It's just they, like, I did this, then you did that. So those two must be related.
Right, if I now, paw for, at you,
right.
You pet me.
Right. Yep.
That's a good one.
So the idea that humans, we think, well, I'm doing this because, and then we justify it. Dogs don't do that. Dogs are like, well, what happened right before I got here? Right? And go ahead.
I used to have a trainer back a few years ago. He used to tell me that dogs, they don't reason like how, you know, humans do. You know, we all have the ability to be like, oh, well, this is hot because that's a fire. But a dog, they just associate everything. They don't, right. They just, oh, that thing burned me last time. I don't want to touch that. Like, they're not going to be like, oh, right. That's a fire. It's hot. Like, no, yeah. That's not how their brains work. So it's all, yeah. Dogs just work through association of, you know, past experiences and past events. And
100%.
Any animal.
And that's how we, that is how we train them, right? That's the gold standard. That's what we use to train dogs.
Yeah.
The fact that they are such associated like creatures. So we can take a dog and associate them to a word that means you did good and a word that means no, try again. And then that's how you get a dog to sit. That's how you get a dog to down. That's how you get a dog to stay. All of these things. So we use that all the time. But the other side of it is you can also use it inadvertently and negatively impact your dog. And so that's what we're talking about with this. Because too much free affection makes leadership feel optional, mm-hmm. right? And as soon as leadership is optional in the house and them following you is optional because maybe it's not required, now you're playing catch up.
Yeah.
All right. And so to the trainers, right? Because you don't really have clients, right? But I'll let you jump in on this one too. What's an example of a client who accidentally rewarded problem behavior with affection and then ended up having to like undo that later?
It's always, I don't even have a specific client, but I feel like in general, it's right. always.
I mean, you don't have to call clients out. But.
No, well, I wouldn't know anyways, but a lot of the times, it's demand barking. So a lot of clients don't understand that it's demand barking. They're just, they're like the client or the dog is communicating with me, right? They want something. And so their life goal then at that point is to figure out what their dog wants. And so they will let them outside. And then the dog doesn't even go to the bathroom and it comes back in. And they're like, well, maybe they're hungry or thirsty, or maybe they want a toy, or maybe they want this or that. Right. So they then strive to meet that goal of, well, the dog's barking, so it obviously wants something. And that may be true, but the dog might just want your attention. 9 times out of 10, the dog just wants your attention. It doesn't need to go to the bathroom. It doesn't need water. It doesn't need food. But when you give that dog the attention that it's seeking through barking, you're meeting them right back where they wanted you to meet them. And it's, hey, I'm barking. I want something, I want something, I want something. Oh, you gave it to me. Cool. Now I'm going to do it every time. And then the dog builds in this pattern that we don't even realize. Just like with threshold manners, I am number one on threshold manners of when we open the door and the dog just runs out. We have no problem until it's like the front door, or we move and it's on a busy street, or we're in an apartment and they can't run out the front door. And those are the patterns that we build that we don't realize until it's just a little too late. And then it's like, oh, I have a problem.
All right. So mine is really quick. It's the dog that jumps on you.
Ooh.
Every single time. Reason why a dog jumps on you and still jumps on you is because at some point in that dog's life, probably towards the beginning, someone was petting that dog when they jumped up on them.
Because it was short.
Because it was short and it was cute and it was little and it wasn't really a problem. But now they're 80 pounds and now it's kind of a problem.
Now it's a problem.
Now they're knocking down kids.
Plowing, right. Plowing end of things.
Yeah.
I have no breaks.
You got one, Melody?
No.
Because then I'm going to ask Nick. So not so much on the affection. I mean, it can be affection, but I'd be curious on the military side. Is there an example of a time where you worked with a dog that like started doing something? No, you're still up. But where you, an example of a dog that maybe you inadvertently reinforced and then you ended up with a behavior that you were like, what, where did this come from?
Ooh, that's a solid question.
So, I want you to think about it while Melody answers. So.
Well, my answer is quick because it was going to be the jumping one, and you probably know a scenario I was thinking of, but a lot of times people might want, they'll accept affection and a behavior within context, but they don't want it in another context.
That's a good point.
Right. Ooh.
Right. That's a really good point.
That's a good one. That situation was like... And the person knew, she immediately knew. She was like, yeah, I'm reinforcing the behavior that I'm asking y'all to help me correct.
Yeah. Right.
So in that situation.
Because it was okay here, but right. not okay
there.
We
don't
there.
Want it's her okay to jump me, on but other, not people. Other people. Yeah, or yeah. whenever she wants. So, you know, sometimes we would come up with a tailored plan. And you've done that with Nala, with the, you know, jumping up. You know,
yeah, on his arm.
So sometimes we'll do a tailored thing.
What she's talking about, or just real quick so we can explain it. So I have a process to allow my Belgian Malinois to jump up and get affection from me, right? And so she is not allowed to, one, demand it. So she doesn't come up to me and just jump on me. But I can put her in a strict heel, a foos, right, is the command that we use for her. And she strict heels on the left side. And then I give her eye contact, and then I get focus, and then I put my arm out in front of me, and then I say, okay. And then she jumps up onto my arm with her two paws, and then I can wrap my arm around her and like hug her and stuff. But it's all done from the side, not from the front. It's all done by me asking for it, me demanding that behavior basically from her. And so it's not something that she can initiate.
And so this is where that clarity comes in for the dog so that they're not confused. Like, why am I allowed to do this similar jumping action with you, but not someone else? So that's perfect how you kind of, you know, you made it in the details and you controlling and initiating everything so that right. it is
and
clear
it's always
the
same process. It's always on the left side, always with eye contact, always with engagement. Then I offer the opportunity to do that, right? Super important. Nick, what you got?
Yeah, that was a good question. I had to really think hard about that one, to be honest with you.
tune them off real quick.
Yeah, I don't want to single anyone's dog out in the past.
No names. You don't have to use names.
I think one of the most common ones that we have is with just about every one of our male dogs is marking. Okay. And that comes like where it becomes problematic for us is, you know, when we're doing detection lanes.
Yeah.
More so than not, you know, it is more problematic, you know, when you have more male dogs running after. But taking like for the trainingism, like, yes, that is where, you know, you tell your dog to take a break or you just take them on a walk or, you know, whatever the case may be. And, you know, that dog, he's not actually relieving himself. He's just
right.
going and marking.
Right.
Well, when I tell my dog to go and search, you know, whatever command that may be, when he goes out, you know, sometimes he'll have to relieve himself. And when he does relieve himself, you know, a lot of times the handler will allow the dog to relieve himself. Because at the end of the day, like if I'm patrolling, if I need to use the bathroom, I want to use the bathroom too. Mm-hmm. If given the opportunity. But a lot of times like we'll give the dog the opportunity to do that. And next thing you know, it's like, oh, is he going to pee? And then you're like, oh, he just marked. And then you're like, ah. And then, as we talked about timing earlier, because we didn't know he was going to, you know, we didn't know he was going to mark. We thought maybe he was going to relieve himself. We didn't correct that behavior. Now timing is off.
Right.
And so since the timing is off, you're like, like if I correct him now, he's like, as he's already walking away. It's like, oh, he's walking away. I'm going to correct him for walking away. Right. Like that's improper timing. You know, you don't want to get that wrong timing.
Right. So that's where we always talk about like punishment versus a correction.
Exactly. Right. Correction happens in the moment. Yeah. Right. And punishment is afterwards. We just don't recommend anybody punish your dog.
Yeah. And punishing, I think punishing, it's always I don't want to say it's a gray area because it's mm-hmm.
But we're also working at majorly different levels.
Exactly. Yeah. No, absolutely. Yes. But, you know, it's with that, though, with the whole marking.
Yeah.
It's one of those like, ah, and then next thing you know, the dog did it two more times. But, you know, you start to become more aware of it. You're like, oh, he's about to do it again. You know, and you give him like a quick little leash pull. Like, hey, buddy, come on over here. Yeah. You know, you're correcting that behavior. So
right. We do have clients with pet dogs sometimes that have males, and they're like, you know, on our walk, they stop 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times. And it's like, cool. You get three for me, three max. And then we're walking. And if you stop, I'm still walking. So you know Absolutely. What? You're still coming with me. So you don't even have time to mark anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So next question. How do you explain to owners that dogs don't see cuddles the same way that people do? Anyone want to jump on that one?
So I always look at it as like, I always compare it to kids. So if you look at a kid that only gets affection and no structure, most of the time you have a kid that is unruly and does whatever they want until they get a consequence. When you have a kid that you build in structure with, the kid knows what to expect, and you see less of those unruly behaviors because they know what's going to come next. So for me, that's how I kind of always initiate the conversation in a comparable way. Because if you just compare it in a dog way, right, it's like everybody just wants to cuddle their dog. Like that's why they bought the dog most of the time. It's because it was cute and it was soft and it was fluffy and it looked at them with these sparkly eyes. And kids don't always do that because they're tearing up your stuff. But the minute your dog tears up your stuff, you're probably going to kind of look at it the same way. And if you don't give that dog the structure that it needs, you can show it as much affection as you want, but it's still going to do whatever it wants to.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, I think, and we're not saying like, don't cuddle your dog. It's just more of, this is probably leading into some other things, but a huge piece of this affection, I believe, is just literally the word calm.
Yeah.
So when your dog is calm, give it affection, cuddle it. I mean, we already kind of touched on, you know, if we're tailoring things with the dog jumping in context, but generally, I would say, you know, like cuddling is fine as long as it's within.
Four on the floor.
Yeah. Yeah. Four on the floor when the dog's calm.
Yeah.
Because otherwise if you're petting it and giving it lots of affection when it's hyped up, then expect it to expect that every time, you know,
like, every time.
Yeah. So you come in the door and you don't want it jumping on you, then don't pet it, you know, or cuddle it immediately afterwards when it's doing that.
Some people don't just get that you just have to ignore your dog for a little bit, like just a few minutes when you get in that front door, and then you can cuddle them all they want once they relax. Yeah. I come out in the morning and I will walk one by one to all four of our dogs and give them cuddles if they held their place. But it's like, that's what I expect, is for you to hold your place. I don't get to come out of the bedroom and you be like, oh my goodness, I want you to relax on your place, and then I will come one by one. But if you break from your place while I'm petting another dog, you have to go back and you still don't get your pets yet.
Yeah.
You're the last one in line now.
Absolutely. I think one of the big things to touch on for this too is, you know, it applies to both pets and for working dogs and any dog owner around, is the key term of anthropomorphism. Excuse me if I'm saying
I love
wrong.
The way, no, you said it exactly right. I've tried to say this word before.
I don't think I've
caught it on the podcast, but I'm going to try to avoid. Great job though. Yeah, keep going.
That word is a mouthful.
I mess it up every time.
But for those of you listening that don't know exactly what anthropomorphism is it is the, you know, the ideals that animals have, humanistic, features and thoughts. So, you know, oh, my dog feels sad because of this. Oh, I didn't give my dog enough love, so my dog is upset. That's not how dogs think. You know, nope. I'm sorry if I'm being a little too blunt for you. but end of the day, your dog doesn't care if you're cuddling him or not.
Yeah.
And realistically, you know, as I kind of touched on earlier, is, you know, that affection, you talked about it in one of your podcasts earlier, is about that whole, it's not always about pack mentality, but simply you being around your dog is just enough for that dog to already feel love, feel accepted. And that's really where, like, the big, you know, misconception of, you know, physical love versus just the simple, oh, this person allows me, like this being is allowing me to be with them in their domicile.
Yeah.
And that in itself is miles like large for the animals. Yeah. So I think something like that is definitely big for, you know, the owners out there who do think that they need to give their dog all the attention in the world. And then the second part that I kind of wanted to touch on too was with all that the free love and, you know, not having established leadership. Might be showing my age when I say like the decade here, but the way I like to think of this one is, you know, if you look at, you know, children that grew up in the 1970s and before, you have your mom who would stay at home. Typically, she would stay at home, mm-hmm. and she was never seen as a disciplinarian. Yeah. And a lot of times, you know, you had a lot of those, like, you know, 8 to 13-year-old boys. From, and this is just stereotypes here that I'm speaking about that I think I understand, is, you know, these boys would just essentially run all over the mom, and the mom would always say, wait till your father gets home.
Yeah.
Father gets home, and then next thing you know, those boys are acting right because they know what the father can do. Granted, completely different, you know, story from back then versus, you know, what's allowed and acceptable today. But it's a good, like, just metaphor in order to, you know, kind of conceptualize the leadership, so to say. And I'm not saying, you know, if you are a mom from, you know, 1970s or earlier, I'm not, by no means am I knocking you. I'm just using it, you know.
I'm a 90s baby though, and I for sure heard that line.
Exactly.
Nah. I for sure did. And I was always straight laced when my dad came home. I was like, no, I'm not messing with him.
So to tie it in with this next point, and I'm going to try to keep this, we really strive to get into that like 1 hour like time block, but we're covering a lot of really good information that I want. So, it's not a problem if we go over a little bit, but I'm going to tie this into our second point though, because our second point is leadership first, followed by affection second. So this is the solution, right? So we talked about the problem. We've kind of framed out the problem, but what do you do about it? And the dog owners that are listening and they're like, oh, cool. So now I'm just messing it up because I'm hugging my dog. That is not what we're saying, but just put it second to you stepping up into that leadership role for the dog, and everything else falls into place. And so what I mean is leadership builds trust, and that makes affection more meaningful. When you lead the house, the dog respects leadership. Dogs value leadership and respect far more than they do affection. And that comes from their animalistic tendencies and their, you know, evolution as a breed, right? Regardless of their genetics are going to play this role. Their 98 or 99% of their genome comes from wolves, right? And that doesn't mean they are a wolf, but it does mean that there is a direct descendant like line here. And the concept that every dog is built for and is able to lead themselves around the world is incorrect. They will not. And they invariably are going to make decisions that you're either not going to expect or you certainly wouldn't make for them, right? You wouldn't make the same decision. So you have to start with leadership, that foundational leadership in the home of you asking for what you want, you telling a dog, hey, I would like you to come here, or I would, hey, jump up here on the couch and come get this affection, right? Is totally different than just swooping down on the dog right after they did something and you now reinforcing that with all of this love and affection. Have them do something. Have them come to you. Have that reward, that recall. That's allowed. That's even useful. But when, oh, he just doesn't know, or he's a little scared, or he's a little worried, or he's this, or he's that, and then we coddle the dog, that doesn't send the same message to the dog. So affection given after calm behavior reinforces balance. And a balanced dog is always what you want. You don't want a dog that's just spastic energy, high out the door, like they're at a 10 out of 10 all the time. I talk about how I tell clients all the time that a dog that is at a 10 out of 10 doesn't listen no matter what training they have. They can't. They cannot physically listen at a 10 out of 10. And the concept is that if you watch competition dogs, and you can speak to it from the military dogs, Nick, but the goal is to train this dog to be at like a 9.8.
Just always right? teetering that fine
right. line. Just right on the fine line of, oh, it's almost at a 10. They're fully engaged. Oh, they're so excited. They're whatever. They're like ready to bite, ready to react. But they're not at a 10. Because if they're at a 10, it doesn't matter what training they have. They're in an animalistic state where they are just they're subconsciously reacting. Yep.
We like to call our dogs manageable monsters.
There you go.
Because, you know, they do, you know, for our dogs specifically when they're doing bite work, you know, they are so far into it. But having that just ounce of level-headedness to be able to hear me say, out here, you know, that just having that little tiny little bit of thought process in that dog's head. Mm-hmm. You can't always have that. You don't always want that 10 out of 10.
Right. And so we focus on building that emotional regulation into the dog so that they can interact and play and be excited and all of those things that we want, but at like a 9 or an 8, right? Because we can, that way we have a little bit of headroom on that, right? We can go up just a little bit. A great example to relate like your bite work to the pet dog is a dog who's like got the zoomies.
Yeah.
Right. And they are at a 10 and they are zooming around the house and they're so excited and this is the best day of their life and it's so much fun. And right as that's happening, right as they're in the middle of that zoom, 9 times out of 10, most owners will be like, yeah, they don't listen at that moment. Right. Right. How could they? They haven't been taught. So we can teach the dog that calmness. We can reinforce the calmness. We can use the affection in this case, relating it back. We use the affection to reinforce calmness. The dog will always be able to go back up. But teaching the dog to come down is really, really important. And so we want to use affection like to align with our goals for the dog. You can cuddle your dog, but do it when the dog is calm. Do it when the dog is paying attention. Do it when the dog gives you engagement, all of those things. So now you're using affection as a tool in the house and you're cuddling your dog. You can do both. All right. Did you have something to add on it? So love paired with leadership strengthens the relationship, but it has to be paired with leadership, not just by itself. We don't just give the dog love and affection by itself with no boundaries and no leadership. That by itself creates anxiety because the dog doesn't know what you're reinforcing, right? And it's just going to start picking out things. Maybe this was acceptable. Maybe this was acceptable. Why am I getting all of these pets right now? Why am I getting all of this? And they could have been just thinking in their head how bad they wanted to go murder that squirrel outside, right? You don't know what you're reinforcing. So give them an activity, ask them for a behavior, and then reinforce it with your affection.
Right. Gabe is the most anxious dog that we have, and he will get affection mostly when he's on his place bed. That's like the primary right. place that we give him affection, where we will come over and we will give him some pets. Cause any other time he is like, what is that? Oh, what is that? Ah, what is that? And I was grinding his nails earlier today, which I very rarely do, but I have been working on with him and I grinded his nails earlier and he got the most affection, but at the right times. And I was super careful with that to not give him affection after I stopped grinding his nails or in the middle of changing his nails. Like I was giving him affection at the right moments when he had withheld and been like, okay, I can do this. And then was like, yes, that's a perfect way to do that because he's like not pulling away from me. He's not frantically trying to escape. So I think those are the things that a lot of people feel guilty for. But if you have a severely anxious dog, giving them affection is so not dangerous, but it can be so impactful on that dog and worsen it way more than it already is.
Absolutely. I think my rescue dog at home, she is.
My rescues are hard.
Oh, yeah. And she, long story short, she was found in a dumpster when she was a puppy.
Oh.
ASPCA saved her and all that good stuff. And, you know, same story how you were talking about earlier. You know, she was cute, so we brought her home.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, she's not cute anymore.
The hardest dogs.
Oh, my goodness.
They will test you.
The amount of anxiety this dog has and how I talked about earlier, timing is everything. Yeah. You know, you try to calm the dog down with some pets. and, you know, just very easy, soothing, you know, reinforcements. And next thing you know, like you're reinforcing some fear that she already like was right. Just, you didn't even know she had.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh my goodness.
We find new things all the time. It's like he pulled out a GoPro one time and just like walked by him and Gabe was just like, what is that? And I was like, right. Like who trains for like specifically a GoPro to be pulled out? Right. It's like we've worked on so many things with Gabe and like trying our best to expose him to everything. But my man will find one thing to niche down on. And he is like, that's actually really scary. I can't do it.
I think that kind of just like plays into a little bit what we were talking about earlier, where like everyone kind of has their cap. And I think as trainers and as dog owners, we all need to have like realistic expectations on what our dog is truly capable of.
Yeah.
Truly capable of.
Yep.
So that's definitely one of those, you know, boundaries that are, you know, they have to be made at some point and understood by everyone involved.
Right. He's definitely the one that's taught me that, because it's like he's still fearful of a lot of things. And it's like I've owned him for a while now and I'm a dog trainer, right? It's like, well, he should be like 100%. He is one of those dogs that he will never be 100%. Like he will always find something to be fearful of, whether he was genetically born like that or whether something happened to him from before I had him that I don't know what it was. And it was so terrible. It's just like carried over into everything. But he's one of those dogs that he'll never be 100%, but he has come so far that I don't think I could be more proud of that dog if I tried. He grabbed a ball the other day for goodness sakes, and he has never touched one. And he's almost six.
I love that. All right. So I'm going to take a quick break here and open it up for questions. So one of the things that I realized that we're, as we go on this podcast journey, we're getting better at certain things. And I need to continue to get better at other things. One thing we didn't cover at the beginning is how this podcast is structured differently. And I didn't explain that we have live clients on the line that are listening, because this is a like a group pack leadership call that we do on a weekly basis for our clients. And they have been patiently kind of waiting in the background, but we're at like the 50-minute mark. And I really want to give anybody who has a question an opportunity to ask, whether it's to the trainers or to Nick with his background on the military side. You guys are free to ask whatever comes to mind. And I still don't have the Jeopardy music.
Hi, it's Lila.
Hey, Lila.
Hi.
I have a question for Nick.
And I'm here for you. What's up?
I was just wondering, you were talking about how you have to give your like explosive dogs a replacement behavior if they get afraid. I was just wondering what that looked like in that sort of situation.
Yeah. So a lot of times, you know, when we're training, you know, when we're using you know, things like flashbangs, right? They're small explosives that we carry around and you throw it into a room and it makes a very large light and a very loud sound. Sometimes, you know, dogs, they're not going to be expecting it. They get scared of it. So in a situation like that, what we do is we'll replicate the precursors to that loud sound. So when you throw a flashbang, there's a metallic ping and then you could hear it bouncing around before it, you know, makes that explosion. So a lot of times what we will do is we will just take a flashbang that's already been used and we'll put everything back together so we could replicate that exact sound. Mm. So this way that dog, you know, he'll hear that precursor and then he's going to look to me. And this is where we come in, as you know, when we're doing these dry runs with him, we'll throw that flashbang and we'll, you know, we'll tell the dog, hey, sit, hey, down, hey, you know, do whatever I want you to do. And then when he does that, you make it like, hey, like, good job, buddy. You know, you give him a toy in that situation when you're doing your practice runs. But then when you're doing the real thing, that's where that physical praise comes in, because, you know, you're doing the real thing at this point. I have my hand that's right next to his head. Sometimes I'll try to give him a little, like, I'll cover his ears a little bit. And then I'll give him, as once that explosion goes off, if he gets a little startled, I'll just give him a little pet. You know, hey, it's all right. And put him back in that position of, you know, the sit or the down, whichever one I want him to be in. And then we move from there. Mm. It's,
So you give the dog a job.
Exactly. Yes.
Right. Mm. So like Brianna's, that I've had a few people already call out, Brianna's favorite thing to talk about on the podcast is her threshold work. Right. My favorite thing
through the door. It's not my favorite at all.
Right. My favorite thing to harp on is how important it is for dogs to have a job. Right.
Absolutely.
Because when you don't give the dog a job, why are you upset that they're choosing their own line of work?
Exactly. Right. Dogs love to follow. And if you're that leader that, you know, that dog needs, there, things will fall in line the way you want because you are the leader. Does that answer your question?
It does. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you.
And I heard you, Ryan, it started coming in my head, give the dog a job right when he was saying that, give the sit and the down.
Yes, I love that. I love that. Yes, that's my favorite thing to do. Now, that is one of the lessons that has been the most influential on me with my dog training journey. And like, if you don't give the dog a job, how can you expect them to, how can you say they're doing the wrong thing?
Yeah.
Does anybody else have any questions here? And then we're going to drive on to our third point and then we'll wrap it up tonight. The silence is deafening. It's okay.
We can move on.
All right. We're going to move on to point number three. Affection as a reward, not a default, right? So when affection is tied to a good behavior, it becomes like this powerful training tool. But if it's not actually tied to a behavior, it can create something that's unknown. You don't know what it's going to create, right? So petting and praise should mark desirable states. And we can use that to kind of reinforce our calmness. We can use that to reinforce good behavior. We can use it to do a lot of things. But it can also, just like anything, a great amount of a power or a good tool can be used improperly and it can create a problem for us. So all that we are advocating for here is not that you don't ever pet your dog. It's just that you use the affection and just tie it to a good behavior. So dogs learn that affection is earned rather than it just shows up randomly. So this is the same concept as when we use food or play, we use a tug or toy or a ball. And it makes sense to us in all these other aspects. It's like, well, of course, I don't want to give the dog food after they just pooped on the floor. But then we do that same thing, just renaming those two activities, right? We pet the dog that just jumped up on us. That is the same equivalent to giving the dog a treat right after it got done pooping on the floor. So don't do that. The default affection often teaches entitlement too. And this is a complicated topic that probably needs its own podcast. But when you work with entitled dogs, there is an army of angry people that I'm sure will shake their fists at me listening to this podcast at some point, someday. And I mean, as soon as we get over the hump of maybe like 20 listeners, when default affection, teaching entitlement, like, well, what is that? What does that mean? Where my dog can't be entitled, right? No, the dog doesn't think like that. They just respond to this or to that. That is not what my experience tells me. And I would love, Nick, you are a subject matter expert with well over a decade of experience on the highest level, like the highest trained dogs that the military has and like in the special operations community. What is your take on entitled dogs?
My dog is a perfect example of it. he's now retired. He is entitled to the sense of he now gets pets now that he is, I don't want to say just free pets whenever, but in his retirement, he has learned from a variety of people that if he just goes up to them and nudges them, he's getting all the pets he wants. And that to me is one of the most, to me, this is just my own personal opinion, I hate that. Absolutely hate it.
Nala doesn't. I hate it too.
and you know, my dog, he's by no means a weak dog. Like, he is like 60 pounds of pure muscle. Yeah. So he comes in, and when he, you know, moves your hand saying, "Hey, pet me."
Right.
He does it with meaning it. Like, he's like, "You're going to pet me." And that right there is, that's entitlement.
That is demand behavior, right? And so I want to ask, because someone listening to this for the first time is going to be like, "Oh, you don't like it when your dog comes and asks for pets? Why? Right. What is the reason?" Right? Because as a dog trainer, we look at this as like, so that's just the surface level issue. Right. But what it creates is this like second and third level issue. So why don't you like that behavior?
Because it's demand behavior. Okay. It's the same as like if a dog,
what does it create?
It segues to a whole bunch of problems. It segues to the dog was like, "Well, I did this and I got that. So if I do this, I'm going to get this." And then I can talk them in to like metaphorically doing things how I want.
Right.
And that doesn't fly with me.
So how I would explain it is, it's like sleeping in the bed, or it's like it's like doing a lot of different things that owners like to do for their dogs, right? And by itself, those things are usually okay. But at the moment where you're coming and hiring a professional dog trainer and potentially paying a lot of money to fix these other issues in the house, but then we look and we're like, but the dog just comes up to you, literally like moves your hand away from what you're doing, or jumps on your laptop when it's on your lap, right? This was a recent one. Like, the dog jumps up onto your lap, right? Pushes the buttons, yeah. Like basically paws at the screen and moves your laptop out of your lap so that you'll pet them. Well, at what point do you not think that that is related to the dog pulling on the leash in order to go off and smell this mailbox when they walked by it?
It's the same thing.
It is the same thing.
And if you wouldn't accept it from your child when you're trying to talk on the phone with your boss or trying to talk with your friend and your child's not stopping, interrupting, you know, then why would you accept that from your dog?
Right.
Creating that attention seeking and then just going off on another tangent. Some dogs that I've experienced, they are on some level of having separation anxiety or insecure attachments. Yeah. And so that's a whole nother thing. Yeah. So then you're just feeding into that.
Right.
So that's a whole nother, just going back to like, you're in control. It has to be when you say and when the dog's calmer. So not when it, you know, demanding is not just demand barking, like you've said, it's, you know, nudging you, licking. I hate the licking, I'm just gonna say. And so they may go and just like lick your leg constantly. Yep. Try to find your hand and lick it. Yep. And so I would make it a point to ignore them and then give them, you know, maybe a replacement behavior and then give them attention when they're calm. But you do have to be really careful with the balance of that, because some of the dogs that are more so maybe have like an insecure attachment, you might have to just only like say something and or pet them, but not both, type of thing, like, because they'll get riled up really easily and then they start demanding it, you know? Yeah. So you just have to be careful with the dogs that seek the attention more than food.
Yeah.
Basically.
Right. Because Nala will do it, but she's just like, "Hey, pet me. I really love you." Like, that's her whole thing. Mm-hmm. Gabe will do it just the same. But his is insecure. He's like, "Hey, I'm kind of uncomfortable. Can you just like pet me?" And it's like, no, I'm not going to pet either of them in hindsight.
But for two different reasons.
I'm going to tell both of them, no, Nala, because you're not in charge of me. Get out of here. And two, because she will try to bully her way through any situation. She's like, I'm a pro.
She's a very assertive dog. She's like, that comes from the high drive.
Right. Yeah. And Gabe, on the other hand, is just uncomfortable with everything. And he's like, just please, like, I don't know, save me from whatever is going on. And I'm like, I'm not going to comfort you. Go lay back on your place, like I said. Yeah.
All right. So the gold standard question, and then jump in here before I go down that one.
To kind of just add into that too, it's just really establishing that, you know, as black and white as this may sound, is the dog is subservient to you, and it, you know, take it to as you will. But I mean, really having those boundaries and well-defined lines of, hey, I am in charge and you are not. That's really where it comes down to for dog owners out there.
Right. So I think we talked about this on the first episode, was that like you're not in a democracy with your dog. Right. And because your dog doesn't have voting rights, and it can't, because you're telling it to do all of these things all these other times and you're expecting it to listen. But then when we get into bed and we're cuddling, we're now equals. Right. That doesn't make sense to the dog. And if it makes sense to you, I promise you, it's not thought about the same way by your dog.
Right. The dog so does not really think important. It's bestie. Like, right. we're not besties here. It's like somebody has to lead. And if it's not you, it's the dog.
Yeah. And a lot of times dogs just step up into that role. I talk about this all the time at private lessons, is the dog is not trying to subvert you. The dog is not trying to alpha role you or all of these other things that have become like popular in conversation in the dog training community recently. The dog is just like, are you going to do something about that? No. Okay. Well, I'll take care of it. And then they make a decision.
Right.
And 9 times out of 10, that decision that they made is not what you wanted.
Right. And so going back to like the affection category, affection for a dog can be a resource. And so sometimes we see pet dogs that resource guard their humans. And it's because they get all of the structure, the love, the affection from that human, because that's a human that's all home all the time. We got into COVID and we saw a huge wave of people working from home. And with that, we saw a huge wave of dogs with anxiety and separation anxiety and resource guarding of their humans and their spaces, because that's where they were all the time. And now we have this thing where it's like, well, the dog is resource guarding me. Well, you're the one that works with it. You're the one that pets it. You're the one that shows it everything that it needs. Of course, that's what it's going to end up doing, because just like food and just like toys, affection is just another resource for a dog.
That, I can't believe that I didn't put that point in the outline, but I am so glad that you brought it up.
You're
because,
welcome.
Right, great job. because so this is to go down this rabbit hole, I think it's super, super important. So let's define this. When we're talking about affection as a resource, if that dog, just like if you leave the dog's food out and they can go and get the food whenever they want, if they're able to come up to you and demand and assert themselves and produce that resource, i.e. the affection, they're able to get that resource when they want, you become a resource that they can potentially become guarding of.
Right, and so right? It's not always and the so structure
then,
person.
Right, and so then suddenly you get a dog that's like exhibiting some aggressive behavior in and around the house and you can't figure it out.
Right.
But if you start to really dial those in, you start to figure out, oh, well, when I go and give, maybe the affection is to the wife or to the husband or either one, but then the husband and wife go and embrace, and suddenly the dog is like having a fit.
Right.
Because they're getting this contact affection that the dog sees as, hey, that's mine.
Yeah.
Right. That's a really, really good point. I can't believe that I missed it. So good job.
Behavioral here.
Right. Resource guarding. it can create resource guarding. All right. So now the golden question. How do you teach clients to use affection strategically? And I would love for, even though you don't have clients, I'd love for you to weigh in on that, because like, this is like, so what do we do? What would we have people do?
So we've said this before, which is just a simple concept to remember, is first this, then this. It's very simple, you know, not giving the dog affection until it's done what you've expected of it to do.
Mm-hmm.
And also not giving it affection when it's overstimulated, overreactive, hyped up, whatever, when it's calmer. Just basics, literally first this, then this.
Nice. Nick?
I mean, I think you definitely hit it on the head there. But one of the things that I think that could, help dog owners out there, because I catch myself thinking about it all the time too, is establish a routine for yourself. And when you're able to give that dog, some kind of physical attention, So like for me, for example, one of the things that I do when it comes to, you know, physical attention, not physical praise or anything like that, just attention to the dog, is every once in a while at night, when my wife and I are laying on the couch, she hates when the dogs are on the couch. I don't really care. So for the most part, dogs don't go on the couch.
Not a couch
dog person. But my working dog, he will usually just be laying in his bed. And when he's nice, calm, and usually he's not nice and calm in the house. He is like always looking for something to do, always trying to find something to destroy, always trying to find a kid's toy to.
You're retired, man.
Yeah, exactly.
You gotta chill.
Give him a break. But when I see him laying down as we're watching TV, you know, it's like later in the evening, it's like, all right, cool, we're all calming down. That's when I'll invite him up on the couch, and he never goes on the couch on his own. It's just a routine that I've established for A, myself, and then B, for him. You know, just establishing a good baseline foundation for rules, expectations, and then it does allow, like, for when I do, when he comes up on the couch with me, he understands that he goes on his back and he just gets all the pets he wants for a few minutes. And it is not unconditional either. It's he gets a few pets, and then when I'm done, hey buddy, get off. Like, mm-hmm. go back on your bed.
Yeah.
And it's a very simple, understood task where it's black and white. And that's, I mean, as you talked about earlier, that's what dogs need, black and white.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I do a lot of I like to encourage free shaping behaviors. So as soon as a dog will lay down on its own or exhibit the calm behavior without me even telling it to, that's when I will go over and kind of show some affection and be like, good, you finally calmed down. Like, that's what I was looking for in order to get this. And so sometimes I will work in a variance between demanding or asking for the calm behavior for affection versus looking for them to just start exhibiting that on their own.
Yeah. And my take on it is create a sequence where you ask to initiate that affection. That's it. It could be simple. It could be complicated, right? I detailed how I do it with Nala. It could be whatever, right? Nick is talking about where he, once things have calmed down, then he invites him up, right? Just create something that the dog needs to do every time to set the conditions for you allowing or asking for that behavior, which the behavior is now cuddles. The behavior is the affection, right? It's like, hey, will you sit? Oh, good job. Can you come over here in a heel? Oh, good job. Great job. All right, let me give you some love. Or, hey, don't just jump up onto the couch. Like, get off. Down. Good. Sit. Good job. Climb. Like, come up here to the couch. Like, let me love on you. But that creates something that the dog had to do. And that speaks a completely different language to the dog. Instead of the dog getting it because they wanted it, they did something and they were rewarded for it. And then they still got that affection. You still built that relationship, but you showed leadership at the very beginning. I think it's really, really important. That should be kind of the way forward on that.
Yeah.
All right. Last one. So what's an hour? I kind of already answered this one. What is an everyday routine where affection can be used? So let's talk about where affection should be limited until after calm behavior. And we kind of alluded to that, right? But I think when you walk in the door is probably the biggest one, right? If anyone else has one, they can jump in. But I know Brianna's all about, go for it.
Yeah, I don't ever do anything involving a crate that has anything to do with more than a calm behavior. Even if it's letting them out of the crate specifically, because a lot of people, it's just thresholds, right? It's when somebody lets a dog out of a crate, they're so excited. But why are you excited? Because you're going to breed excitement into that dog. And then it's just going to encourage the dog that busting out of that crate is the best thing that could have been a part of it. And then you're rewarding them just busting out of that door, yeah. just like thresholds.
Right. And so my example was going to be, I walk in the door from a long day at work. If the dogs are already out, or maybe they, that's where they are. They just kind of mill about during the day, and they're going to be excited to see you. There's no turning that off. Like, you want your dogs to be excited to see you. That's usually mm-hmm. something that's good that owners usually like. But how they swarm you or come up and jump on you or try to demand that behavior because they're like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited that you're here. That is where I would prohibit reinforcing that event with affection mm-hmm. until calmness has ensued. At the yeah. point where calmness is ensued, or hey, go to your place. Hey, relax. Hey, why don't you lay down? Chill out, relax. And then reward with that affection.
Right. So with the crate, it's like when we come in the house, the doorbell goes off and the dogs are automatically like, somebody's home. And if we let the doorbell go off and every time we just went to go let the dogs out immediately, that's their new signal that they should get stoked because somebody's there to let them out. And it's the sound of the opening and closing of the doorbell.
Yeah.
And instead, I encourage you, yeah, just leave the dog there for a little bit. Let them relax from that heightened state of, oh, mom or dad is home. Somebody's home to let me out. And just wait until they're relaxed and then go let them out. So come home and do something first.
Yeah. And the only other time I can really think that's a big one is maybe just transitions from like playtime. You'll tell them to break.
Yeah.
Because that could so easily just bleed into you come inside and then they're doing zoomies inside the house or they're bringing their toy inside the house.
Right, yeah.
So yep. just being careful with those transitions, like playtime when they're already hyped up, having a clear, definitive cues and routine where like, we're done with this now. And right. now we're back onto, you know, yeah. you listen and we're not doing the affection now.
Yep.
Yeah. Love that. All right. So we're going to finish this up with our two projects. So every podcast, I come up with two listener projects. Listener project number one today is the calm petting rule. So only pet your dog when they're calm and neutral, not when they're excited, not when they're crazy. And if you reach down and you pet your dog and then they go wild and crazy, maybe decide if you're okay with moving forward with this plan and just pull back your affection just temporarily, let everything calm down, and then give it back, right? But if you continue to reward as they ramp up, they're at a 5, you started petting them, and then they're at a 6 and a 7 and an 8 and a 9, you're not doing them any favors by continuing that process. It might be fun to watch them be super excited, but remember that an excited dog is not necessarily a happy dog. A happy dog is not an excited dog. That is a different frame of mind for dogs. So it doesn't do us any good to ramp them all the way up to 10 because nothing good is going to come from that. If they jump, they paw, they whine for attention, just ignore them until they settle. And then mark that calmness. We use yes to mark that calmness and then provide the affection. Project number two, earned affection. Just pick a daily routine, like feeding, going outside, coming out of the kennel, whatever it is, and require a sit or a down before offering your affection. The exact same way that we would do with food, a treat, a toy, any other condition reinforcer, but use the affection. Pair calm compliance with petting or praise to make the affection the reward. All right, so that is going to wrap up those two projects. The last little piece of this is I'm going to open it up real quick one more time for questions. If you guys have a question over anything that we talked about, any of the live listeners tonight, go ahead and get your questions in now. Go ahead and unmute and just talk right over me. I'm just going to kind of fill the silence here. If the question is related to Nick, just kind of direct it right to Nick. Questions going once.
Go ahead.
I think Cliff had a question.
Hey,
Cliff.
How are you?
How you doing?
Good. Okay. I don't have a question for Nick, but I do appreciate all of his service in the military and his
Thank
training.
Thank you. I appreciate the support.
Chenoa has gotten to the point where I'm working. You know, my wife is disabled, so she takes the dogs out in the living room while I'm working from home. But if I leave the door open, Chenoa's gotten in the habit, and I don't think this was anything we ever really addressed, but she's doing that where she jumps on me and wants the attention. I'm trying to work, just every topic you brought in up tonight. And she just wants me to pet her or touch her or something. And I'm like, I need two hands to type on this keyboard. So what is the response I should be giving to her, just to put her in place or just get her?
So I know that Chenoa, because we've worked together on this. So I know that Chenoa has a little place bed, right?
Yes.
I would move that in with you, like into the same room, so that she can see you, but not necessarily be on top of you.
Okay.
And then work through that place, right? And initially, when you move a place bed, this is an important dog training concept, is just because a dog learns that place means like I'm supposed to lay in this place when it's over here. Sometimes when you change the events and you change the area, you may just have to like go back a step or two in order to reinforce that, hey, the same behavior is expected over here as it was over there. So just be ready for that. But I would move the place bed and use that as an alternative. Like, hey, I am telling you, no, you need to be on place. And then you have to hold her accountable to that. It will be annoying at first when we are like, well, I've told the dog what to do and they're not doing it. Well, now I have to get up. I have to take a moment. I have to put her back over there. But that's super, super important, because if you don't hold Chenoa accountable, and coming from like me training her, right? If you don't hold her accountable, she will find all of those weak points, right? But she does very, very, very good with place. And I know that she does well with place. So I know that we can work through that.
Yeah, she will place with me. Sometimes she fights me tooth and nail, but it's like I told you the first time we met, which I think you said you were going to use in your training, that it's not the dog that's hard to train. It's their humans.
Sometimes. So,
she does good place with me when I need her to.
Yeah, she has her moments, but the other situation is we have had the flu bug run through our house. And of course we have a very energetic 8-month-old bulldog, and we both needed to, I mean, I don't think I woke up for more than an hour on Saturday and Sunday.
Oh my goodness.
And it was just very hard to, you know, you still have to, obviously they still need you. So sick or not, you've got to still provide. So is there, I mean, I felt bad just kind of leaving her in the kennel for longer than usual, but obviously this isn't going to be it shouldn't be a big issue. Should it have been?
I don't think that it's a big issue to intermittently leave a dog in a kennel longer than you normally do. And I know that you're not leaving her in there for like 12 or 14 hours at a time either. So, but I think that it is, I mean, did she have an accident in the crate?
No.
Right. So, I mean, she did great.
She does. Unless she has been sick to her stomach, she has a very sensitive stomach. I know, so if I won't let her have anything else except for her kibble and the few types of treats that we allow her to have.
Yep.
Because she has a very sensitive stomach, and she gets anything else and she will just, boom, it's a nightmare. And I definitely didn't want that during being sick.
Yeah, yeah. No, I wouldn't do anything different. Here's the thing, like what you do regularly and consistently impacts the dog's learning process. What you do once in a while has a significantly less of an effect. And so at the end of the day, you're not doing those things you're not leaving them in the kennel for a long time because you wanted to. Like you literally have a health issue, right? Like, and she survived. She's still fed. She still has water. She's still doing great. and she didn't even have an accident in the kennel. I would not feel guilty about that or feel like you're doing the wrong thing.
Yeah. And when I feel like I can't physically like provide for the dogs, I will find ways to mentally stimulate them. So like food puzzles and giving them some decompression time with like chewing and sniffing and doing scatter feeding instead of feeding them in a bowl, right? Like putting it on your carpet and like spreading it all around to let them kind of work their way through it. Doing different things like that that can mentally stimulate the dog are always going to be better than physical stimulation.
Okay. I did have one other question in regards to the potty training. Yeah. I know this first incident was my own fault, but you know, we get up at 6:30 in the morning and I let her out, usually 6:30 to 7, and she's outside parking. So I let her out. I find that I need to go stand out there to watch her, but this one morning I made a mistake and I just let her in and I fed her. We gave her a slow feeder now, so she's not just gobbling it all down. And so she came back in. And I went to work, and I was sitting there, and she was kind of sitting by me. And then all of a sudden, she was gone. And Jen, of course, was sick, so I was, you know, trying to let her rest. And then she came in, and it was gone, and I just had this feeling like something's going down. And she had peed on the floor. My only saving grace is she usually likes to pee on the carpet. She peed on the linoleum, so I was very thankful for that. Then... You know, I, of course, cleaned it up, put her outside. Just, you know, I didn't raise my voice at her. I just, you know, she knew she had done wrong. And so then I brought her back in. And, you know, we had a little time with her. And then I went back to work. And same thing, she was there. And all of a sudden she was gone. And she came back in here and pooped. But she's like going to the back door, because that's where she knows she needs to go out. But she's not letting me know that she needs to go out there. I know you guys had talked about, well, we need to give her time that she goes out. So these were very unexpected things. But my only saving grace is she did it on the linoleum instead of the carpet.
I gotcha. So there, we address that in three ways. So one, we let dogs out on a kind of a cyclical basis of a certain amount of time that we are confident that a dog is able to hold it. Number two, when we're not able to really like focus on the dog, we usually have a dog in place or in a crate. By that level of confinement can be kind of variant, but that allows us to then focus on what we're doing versus letting the dog, especially an 8-month-old puppy who is going to inevitably make or get into trouble, right? Make a decision that you don't want or make a mistake. And then the third thing is that just dogs in general will once in a while make a mistake, right? Or they'll do something wrong and be like, whoops, right? And like pee or poop in their kennel. And then they're like standing it and they're like, oh, well, that was dumb. I shouldn't have done that. But that is also how they learn, right? As long as you're not creating a trend, as long as we're not creating a trend or seeing a continuation of that behavior, I don't put a lot of weight behind it. At the point where she's continuing to do this, well, now you got to ask yourself, is my structure in place and am I adhering to it and holding her accountable with that structure?
Right. And I think I feel like wrapping back to the first question is that putting that place, if I'd had her there on a place and not allowed her to get off, then she would have, you know, she would have notified me, hey, I really need to go outside.
Right. So we have dogs that there's a syndrome, right? It's called like dirty dog syndrome, where a dog will just use the bathroom like in its space, which dogs don't typically do. And one way around that and to fix that after like modifying other things is to put them in a position where they don't have that option. So it's putting them into a down in their kennel or on a place bed or something like that. So that then you really know if there's a situation involved of where you need to let them out to the bathroom or whether they're just getting up so that they can cause a ruckus and do things, right? So that would be one of like my top solutions is put her on a placebed and put her in a down. And if she breaks a down, it's like you just keep putting her back into the down. And if you feel or know that she needs to go to the bathroom and it's been a long enough time or she's consumed an extra amount of food or water, then take her out on a leash, let her go to the bathroom. But if she doesn't go, it's not an option of playing. It's an option of going to the bathroom. And if you're not going to go, we're going back inside and we're going to lay back down on the placebed.
Right. Okay. And then, and also when they're in place that they start whining, do we just ignore that for the most part, unless it's a or just like you'd said earlier, it's just the kid trying to get attention.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. If she starts whining and that you're good. If she starts whining, you have the opportunity right now while things are fresh to just ignore that and not react to it. If you do react to it and you do give her that engagement, you're going to reinforce the fact that she can whine and at least get your attention, even if it's negative.
Right. That's and what I always say is negative attention is still attention to a dog.
Right. She's trying to do that, but trying to get your attention and engagement. And that's why she's like trying to, you know, jump on your hand or whatever away from the laptop.
Right. And in our whole routine between, of course, you know, all the travel we did this summer and then since we've been back from Tennessee, it's just been illness and our whole routine's been off. She hasn't had her walks or anything. And then she developed a sore on her neck from her collar, I guess, got too tight and got punctured in there. So we've had to definitely loosen that up
because you don't want that. I would get her right back on that schedule. The faster you get her back on that schedule, I know you guys have been sick. The faster you do that, the faster like things are going to return back to normal. She definitely needs that exercise because she's a puppy too.
Well, I appreciate all your guys' help. I'm still waiting for those human classes where you can have the humans come and stay for 3 weeks to learn what they're supposed to do.
All right, I gotcha. Thanks, Cliff. Thanks for the question.
Thank you.
Anybody else have a question for us tonight before we wrap it up? All right, we're going to start moving for the door here. So I want to give a special shout out and thanks to Nick for coming to the podcast tonight and for taking your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It was a great time being here.
Dude, thank you. Thank you for being so gracious and hanging out with the pet dog trainers for a little bit.
I aspire to be one.
Melody, thanks for showing your face back in the general neighborhood.
It was great to be back. Thank you for having me.
I appreciate you being here. So for wrapping it up tonight, I really appreciate everybody tuning in. If you get a chance, I would love to hear about like how we're doing and what we can do better. If you got a comment or a concern, drop it in whatever way you're listening to this later. I'd also love, I think we're up to like 25 review or 25 podcast listeners. I'd love to have a review at some point. Let us know how we're doing. If we need to change things, we'll do our best. It's a work in progress, but we're here for it. Thanks for tuning in to Paw Print Academy. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Recording stopped.